Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
They only listen to me half the time anyway, right?
You think it's that high? Wow, that's generous.
Yes! Go, Cammy!
This is an intervention.
Oh.
Not voting.
Oh, okay.
That is the coolest coffee trick I've ever seen.
I'm going to put a little bit more blackberry.
End of podcast because of that.
I owe you some audio equipment.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Canby Mayor Brian Hodson has asked a group of three city councilors to take a look at all aspects of the city's proclamation practices, given the increased community interest into such matters after his decision to deny a request for a proclamation regarding transgender people last month. Mayor Hodson says the review is needed for a number of reasons. There are no directions for how proclamations should be done in the city charter. It's something that evolved organically and has been passed down from mayor to mayor over the years. The list of 24 or so proclamations that the city issues each year is also largely something Hodson inherited from his predecessor, Randy Carson, with just a few that have been added since he first took office in 2012. Hodson said he will ask the working group to look at how proclamations are done in other cities and jurisdictions and to consider a more formal means by which proclamation requests could be submitted by the public, along with suggested criteria for evaluating and approving these requests. Also on the table is the possibility of changing the way proclamations are presented or doing away with them altogether.
You know, I'm really looking for the city councilors that I want to get engaged on this to look at the proclamations that we have done over the last couple of years, you know, which ones, you know, are important that we want to keep doing or, you know, change. And then also, or do we not do proclamations anymore at all? And figure out a different, at least not do them in the way that we've been doing them, like, you know, reading them at a city council meeting and making it much more of a special ceremony kind of thing.
Hodson says it's not something he expects a working group to accomplish overnight, but he hopes to have some meaningful results to consider by this fall or the end of the year at the very latest. In the meantime, the proclamations will continue pretty much as they have been, with plenty already on the docket for the coming months.
I think coming up in one of the meetings in May, I think we've got, I think, five proclamations that we're reading. So, you know, like last year, I think the last couple of years, I think I gave each one to each counselor to read because there were so many, you know, on that particular meeting. So I may do that again. I may not. I don't know.
Clackamas County has received a Safe System Innovation Grant in the amount of $131,600 from the National Road to Zero Coalition to help meet their goal of ending traffic fatalities by 2035. According to the most recent data, 183 people were killed in Clackamas County traffic crashes across the 7-year period, an average of 26 people a year. The funds would support low-cost, proven safety countermeasures and micro-targeted messages to those most vulnerable to serious and fatal crashes, especially in rural Clackamas County. As an elected trustee for Clackamas County, I cannot sit by and hope that traffic crashes will stop on their own, says County Board Chair Jim Bernard. It's time for us to take action and put all the resources of the county behind this public health issue. This grant from the National Safety Council will make a difference in the community. To qualify for the grant, the county had to explain how its program will improve roadway safety, set a time frame for the reduction in serious injuries and fatalities, outline how the program will be evaluated, and detail how they intend to reach its target audience. This project will showcase the effectiveness of a holistic safe systems approach to traffic safety in reducing fatal and serious injury in a rural community. A safe systems approach combines proven low-cost engineering road safety countermeasures with a focus on behavioral change education for drivers, followed by targeted enforcement with regional law enforcement. The county will work with public health and schools to tackle issues of alcohol and drug use, expand opportunities with rural transit to transport teens and older adults, and work with the Oregon Department of Transportation to create affordable driver's education and child protection options for those with limited means. For more information about the county's initiative, please visit www.drivetozero.org.
Almost 1 in 10 Clackamas County kindergartners have non-medical exemptions from at least one vaccine, according to a recent report by Clackamas County Public Health, and that number is climbing. It's 3 points higher than the number of kids across all grades who have non-medical exemptions, which is 6.2%, or 3,820 Clackamas County students. The county says that over 2,000 kids are completely unvaccinated, and of that number, only 79 have documented medical exemptions. Clackamas County ranks 7th among Oregon counties with the highest percentage of kindergartners who have a non-medical exemption. Clackamas County Health Officer Dr. Sarah Present said last week that vaccine-preventable diseases are on the rise in Oregon, which she linked to a growing trend of parents delaying their kids from receiving vaccinations or exempting them entirely, as well as a lack of access to healthcare services. Over the past 50 years, Dr. Present says, immunizations have saved more than a billion lives and prevented countless illnesses and disabilities in the United States. She says that vaccine-preventable diseases such as measles, mumps, and whooping cough are still a threat to infect U.S. children, resulting in hospitalizations and deaths every year. The county's report also shared a real-life example of vaccines working in Clackamas County. 3 years ago, someone who worked in food service in the county exposed thousands of people to hepatitis A, a highly contagious infection that affects the liver and can be deadly. No one contracted the virus in this case, the report says, because the majority of those exposed had been vaccinated against it. So what's the outlook for Cambie schools? With approximately 93% of its population fully vaccinated, the Cambie School District falls into a category considered moderately vulnerable by the Oregon Health Authority. The recent measles outbreak in Washington State and Oregon has led to the decision by Clackamas County leaders to take preventative action against a resurgence of contagious and potentially life-threatening diseases happening here. Their strategy includes improving access to and education regarding vaccines, strengthening partnerships between Clackamas County Public Health and community organizations, and increasing parent-to-parent education. For more information or to check out the full report, find the link in the article on our website at canbenowpod.com.
Police beat for the week of March 19th through the 25th. On March 19th at 12:26 p.m., a man was cited and released for illegally camping and littering at a site on South Malala Forest Road. The man had previously been warned about trespassing and littering at the same location. On March 20th at 7:45 a.m., officers received a report of kids stealing items from a vending machine. Seems like E1 got away before the cops could see them getting arrested. I got nothing. On March 21st at 9:29 p.m., officers trespassed a transient from local business after customers had complained about the man's drunken behavior and offensive odor. I mean, a guy misses one shower and the whole town just rips him apart. Come on. On March 22nd at 3:30 p.m., officers responded to a report of a stolen vehicle at the Cambie Fred Meyer. After a search, the vehicle was found at the Cambie Fred Meyer. It had been stolen, however, briefly, and several items had been taken, including wrapped presents for the victim's daughter. The suspect was able to gain access into the vehicle because it had been left unlocked with the keys in the ignition. Okay. The victim said she had just run into the store to buy a birthday cake. The Cambie police officer was kind enough to give the victim a Fred Meyer gift card in hopes that it would improve her day. Later that day at 5:16 p.m., a witness reported a vehicle being driven, quote, in a manner consistent with being an impaired driver on Southeast 1st Avenue. Police tracked them down to find, surprise, surprise, an impaired driver. They were arrested for DUI and reckless driving. Late that night at 11:30 p.m., police received a report of car tires being slashed at a business on Southwest 1st Avenue. Based on surveillance video, officers were able to identify and arrest a suspect for the criminal mischief, offensive littering, which is, of course, the worst kind of littering, theft, and an outstanding warrant from Canby Municipal Court. I am not a golfer. I mean, I'm not a good golfer. So when I want to play a few rounds, I head over to Frontier Golf Course. They're family-owned, family-friendly, nine-hole course with beautiful scenery. And they let me rent clubs or bring my own. And they don't judge me for my slices and hacks. Or, you know, my language.
Frontier Golf Course is a great place to meet your buddies and have a drink, or bring your kids along. They're located on Holly Street, just north of town. If you hit the ferry, you've gone too far.
Also, please don't hit the ferry.
Yeah, please don't. But do ask them about Farley the Goat. They love that. Frontier prides itself on being the best value course you'll find in the area. If you haven't been by in a while, you've got to come check out what the new owners have done. Frontier Golf Course, it's a new frontier. Don't you hate it when you're just getting caught up on your favorite show and then your video streaming service drops it without warning? Wouldn't it be cool if you could record unlimited programs at once and watch them whenever and wherever you want? Meet Easy Video from DirectLink, the only app-based TV service in Canby that includes most of the major live local broadcast channels, sports, and national networks. Easy Video is, well, easy. It's compatible with your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smartphone, and laptop, so you have more options for how and where you watch TV. And the best part of all, Easy Video members save an average of $360 a year over traditional cable. Say goodbye to HD fees, DVR fees, equipment rentals, and costly installation. Go to directlink.coop/EZV or visit them at the corner of Southeast 2nd and Juniper Street in Canby to learn more about the future of TV. The Final Inspection. Author unknown. The policeman stood and faced his God, which must always come to pass. He hoped his shoes were shining just as brightly as his brass. Step forward now, policeman. How shall I deal with you? Have you always turned the other cheek? To my church, have you been true? The policeman squared his shoulders and said, no, I guess I ain't, because those of us who carry a badge can't always be a saint. I've had to work most Sundays, and at times my talk is rough, and sometimes I've been violent, because the streets are awfully tough. But I never took a penny that wasn't mine to keep, though I worked a lot of overtime when the bills got too steep. And I never passed a cry for help, though at times I shook with fear, and sometimes, God forgive me, I wept unmanly tears. I know I don't deserve a place among the people here. They never wanted me around except to calm their fear. If you've a place for me here, Lord, it needn't be so grand. I never expected or had too much, but if you don't, I'll understand. There was a silence all around the throne where the saint had often trod, as the policeman waited quietly for the judgment of his God. Step forward now, policeman, you've borne your burdens well. Come walk a beat on heaven's streets, you've done your time in hell. So my guest on the Canby Conversation today is new Lieutenant Jose Gonzalez with the Canby Police Department. Lieutenant, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start by just asking you, because I'm not sure how much, you know, most folks understand police ranks and things. So Lieutenant, right below the chief, right?
In Canby, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some other places, like bigger agencies, you got the chief, captains or commanders,
okay,
lieutenants, sergeants, and then officers.
Yeah. Would you ever have like an assistant chief, or is that not a thing?
Here we'll be, being a lieutenant is almost like an assistant chief.
Okay.
When the chief is gone, one of us be...
Because there's two. You and Lieutenant George Trost.
Yes.
You guys, below the chief, you do all the work, chief gets all the credit, that type of deal. Is that how it works?
I wouldn't say that. I would say that.
Oh, okay.
Chief
okay.
got a lot of responsibilities, and we assist him to basically run the department.
I'm just teasing. No disrespect to Chief Brett Smith at all. So tell us a little bit about your story. You're originally from Venezuela.
Yes, I was born in Caracas, Venezuela. I came to the United States back in 1982.
Yeah, one thing I was interested in, you served in the military over there. What was that like?
Yeah, well, over there back then, it was mandatory. Once you turn 18, to join the military.
Okay.
Unless you had an excuse, either going to college or you supporting your family.
If you had some physical thing that you couldn't serve.
So what I did was I joined the military when I was 17, earlier. So I wanted to finish high school while I was there because you get paid a little bit. So.
Oh, okay.
So I thought, well, let me make some money while I finish school.
Yeah, yeah.
And my plan was to become a commission
officer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was there for about 4 years. And then
during that time, is there branches or?
Pardon me?
Is there branches like our equivalent of like Army, Air Force, Navy?
I was in the Navy.
You're in the Navy.
The Navy / Marines.
Okay.
They do both.
Yeah.
So, and during that time in the Navy / Marines for Venezuela, we did a lot of, back then the relationships with the United States was very good with the military. So we did some training with the U.S. Navy and Marines.
Yeah.
And that's what sparked my interest to learn English.
Because
at that time, I was basically using translators to talk to the Marines and the Navy folks.
So you just wanted to be able to kind of more communicate. You didn't want to necessarily be an American at that point?
In fact, I thought learning English here in the United States when go back to Venezuela will help me in business and jobs and things like that.
Sure.
That's what I was looking for initially.
Yeah, yeah. Certainly couldn't hurt, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
So, you know, I decided to come to the United States. The first town that I came was Miami, Florida. When I arrived there...
This was in 82, you said?
Yeah, 82. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of Hispanic folks there. Everybody spoke Spanish. And I thought, well, I want to learn English. I don't think I'm going to learn it here. You know? And I'm still learning. You know, I have a heavy accent because I was older when I came here.
You speak much more English than I speak Spanish, I promise you. So, and with a much better accent.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you.
So no judgment here.
I appreciate that. So... Obviously, I wanted to go to school, learn English, learn something. So I decided, this is a fact. I looked at the map of the United States. Mm-hmm. I said, and I'm thinking to myself, where can I go that I will be forced to learn English?
Right. And you picked Canby, Oregon.
Well, actually I picked the middle of the United States, which was Oklahoma, the state of Oklahoma.
Okay. Was it a map that had the states or just the
country? No, the map had all the states.
It had the states, okay.
Yeah. And I picked Oklahoma, I figured it's right in the middle.
Yeah, you're not wrong, right? So, I mean, that was a good place to be enmeshed in that. And certainly maybe away from the Miami culture, so.
Nothing against that. I just wanted to learn English.
For sure, yeah.
So I picked that state.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I picked a town in Oklahoma. It's called Miami, Oklahoma.
Oh, no way. That's hilarious.
Which is a very small town.
Yeah.
The northeastern part of the state, close to
Was Kansas. That a coincidence, or you picked it because of
Miami,
Florida?
Oh, there was
Florida.
A college there that I could have gone
okay.
cheaper, you know,
yeah.
and
yeah.
so I figured I'd go there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a town really close to Kansas and Missouri.
Did you get there and you're like, where's the beach?
No. There was actually, I met people in college that they'd never seen the ocean before,
because
they grew up there in Oklahoma and they'd never seen it.
No, we came out here before we moved to Canby. We were living in Missouri for a couple of years.
Oh, really?
And knew a lot of people out there that had never seen the ocean and didn't care to. They're like, we have lakes.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So
it's different, guys, I promise.
But it was a fun experience for me. I learned, you know, basically English. I learned, because it was a country music environment, I learned how to two-step dancing. You know, I wanted to get involved with the culture and learn it and get in, you know, to feel that what it was
they like. Didn't have step dancing in Miami, Florida?
No, they had salsa, you know, which I know how to do.
Yeah.
But I know how to do salsa and two steps.
Yeah.
I haven't danced for a while, but
still, I think. Actually, you guys can't see him. He's doing a two step right now as he's talking. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, right. So, you know, so then after that, you know, working, I work part time jobs while going to school.
Yeah.
And the restaurant business. Yeah. So I was busboy, waiter, cook.
Yeah.
And I got some interest in cooking.
Yeah.
And before you know it, I'm cooking and learning, and I had some interest in becoming a chef.
Mm.
And I, after I was doing that job, the manager said, hey, we'd like to promote you to be maybe in the future an executive chef, you know, a sous chef.
Yeah.
But we want you to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking different places for schooling,
mm-hmm.
and I found Portland had a chef school mm-hmm. back then.
Yeah.
I still do here. So I decided to come to Portland to go to chef school.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up in the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A few years passed.
Yeah.
Past that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think of Oregon and Portland when you first came?
Well, it's funny you asked.
Yeah.
I came in... doing October, November.
Okay.
And it was really gray.
Yeah. This would have been what, like mid-80s?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a lot of rain.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I don't know. So I'm used to, you know.
Sun.
The sunshine. You know, Miami and the Caribbean and Venezuela. And Oklahoma had basically four seasons. You know,
right.
It was really hot in the summer
and
really cold in the winter.
Right.
But here it was raining.
A lot.
Yeah.
In that time, it was raining, like, since, like, for 2 months in a row.
Right, so. right.
But anyways, going to school here at the chef school, I met my wife, mm-hmm. you know, and started dating, mm-hmm. and eventually we got married.
Marissa.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I had no reason to go back to Oklahoma or Miami, Florida, or for that matter.
Yeah.
Venezuela.
Yeah.
Although we got married in Venezuela
with
my folks there.
Yeah. So. Well, as someone who came out here and met a girl and here I am, I know just what you mean. So, sometimes that happens.
So that's how I ended up here in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. What about getting into law enforcement?
So, as through a friend of my wife, he was in law enforcement, her friend's husband. And one time,
it's a little
one day,
different than cooking.
Yes. And I was still cooking, and he said, hey, we need a translator in court. Do you think you can help out?
Interesting.
And I said, well, I don't know. I've never been involved in the court proceedings or anything like that.
Right.
He said,
I can make you a sandwich. I mean,
yeah. So he said, they'll pay you a little bit, you know. So I said, okay, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And I started doing that on the side, you know.
Yeah.
And I started getting more familiar with the law enforcement perspective.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And while meeting a few people, they say, hey, you should be applying for a police officer. They probably need your skills, the bilingual skills, and my approach. They like my approach and,
mm-hmm.
you know, personality, I guess. And
yeah.
I think would be
a good was the military officer. Background part of that as well, or not really? Or
back then, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I decided to, while I was doing that, I was going through school, you know, I finished my bachelor's degree in Portland State University, and then I thought, well, you know, I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah.
And I started testing for the job. And back then, it was really hard to become a police officer. What I mean hard, it was a lot of people were taking the tests. I know I applied for Portland Police Bureau. And I was taking the test. There was about 1,500 people taking the test back then. And with Canby and Marion County and all those places, there were 200, 300 people taking the test.
Wow.
So there's a lot of people taking the test.
Yeah.
So I got very lucky to pass the test here for Canby, went through the selection, through the selection, and then I got hired with Canby back in 96.
Yeah.
That was my
I got hired with George Stroh.
George Stroh, yeah.
Yeah, crazy coincidence.
Yeah, he and I got hired together.
91?
96.
96,
yeah. And we went to the Basic Academy together and worked for 2 years.
Right.
after I left. I went back. I went to work for Portland Police Bureau.
Yeah, yeah. So why did you leave us?
So my wife was working. We had a small child, two kids back then. And then she got pregnant. And then she said, I don't want to work anymore.
Yeah.
Because I want to stay with the kids.
You guys were living up there.
We're living in Tigard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she said she wanted to stay home with the kids. She, you know, we didn't want to pay childcare. And back then, the way the Camby salary was really compared with other agency was very lower.
Yeah.
And the opportunity came from Portland that they will hire lateral. Lateral means that you got experience as a police officer. They'll pay you higher.
Right. You don't have to go back to the bottom rung.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was significant amount of, you know, I had to say it, money.
Yeah.
And I applied and I got hired.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then my wife stayed home for several years with the kids.
Yeah.
That wasn't the main reason.
I guess that's an okay reason. So we'll forgive you.
Yeah.
So but I always kept tied to here. I almost came back.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you really did enjoy it here.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I almost came back after 3 or 4 years in Portland. There was perhaps an opportunity to come back.
Yeah.
And so, but my wife told me that, you know, my wife and I have been married for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
She says, it's not very good to be switching jobs back and forth. You already switched once. You better stay one place.
Yeah.
So I always listened to her.
That's good wisdom.
I said, okay, yeah. And, you know, but I always got good connections here.
Yeah.
With Troy and Lieutenant Troy and all the folks here.
Sure, sure.
Kept that, you know, connection there.
Yeah. Like home. And you really climbed the ranks. You were in Portland Police Bureau for 21 years.
21 years.
Did a lot of different jobs and a lot of different divisions that you worked in.
Yeah, I worked Central Precinct, worked details there, downtown details. Yeah. Got transferred to the Drugs and Vice Division.
Yeah, the two-stepping division, I think.
You were
head of that for a while. So
yeah, Transit.
Yeah,
Police Division, and then ultimately I got transferred. No, got transferred. Got selected to go to the Tactical Operations Division, and I was assigned to the FBI Gang Task Force, and I was there for 12 years.
Wow. What was that like?
It was a great assignment.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Got to work with this task force. Initially was folks one time from Camby, Tigard PD, Washington County, Hillsborough.
Yeah.
FBI, ATF.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of agencies working together.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you, what was kind of your approach, or how did you approach the issue of gang violence or gangs?
My approach was three prongs. Obviously the enforcement part,
you know,
we had to apprehend folks are doing really bad things, especially doing shootings and murders and things like that.
Sure.
The other problem was I did a lot of outreach to the minority communities.
Build trust?
Yeah, build trust. I did a lot of, took my cooking skills.
Oh, really?
To do, I did barbecues for some of the parks in the community.
I bet that went over.
Yeah, that went, yeah, it went over really well. People really liked it.
Cool.
So trying to bring trust and get to know people.
Yeah.
Usually when you get to know people, you can talk to them.
Yeah.
And with a conversation, you can sometimes solve problems.
That's so cool. And there's something just so simple but so powerful about that, about just sharing a meal together or offering somebody a meal that really does break down a lot of barriers, I feel.
And brought the officers, because I have my crew actually doing the cooking and serving. So we're serving the community here, not necessarily serving as police officers, but just having a gathering, you know, like cooking and eating and and just having a little fun with it, you know?
And then there was a third prong?
The third prong was education. So now our guys taught schools. They tried to prevent kids from getting involved in gang.
Okay, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those three things I thought that were important. And we had some success, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, there's still problems.
Yeah.
But it's something you have to work at it all times.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I'm telling them every day, don't get in a gang. So, yeah,
yes,
I'm working on them.
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It's
yeah.
Good. You know, sometimes kids, like any, it doesn't matter the level of economic level for the family. Sometimes they get involved with drugs or bad friends or...
I feel like a lot of times is it that breakdown in security, instability. They're just looking for some kind of stable network to plug into.
Where they can feel like they're home,
have
a family.
Yeah.
So
somebody backing them up.
And I think sometimes what happens, I saw this a lot, is like, for instance, I'm going to give you a perfect example.
Sure.
I'm a police officer, and my kids... you see a picture of my son here. His name is
Coast
Michael
Guard.
Gonzalez. He is a police officer in Portland. He wanted to be a cop.
Yeah.
I got another kid. He's in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
He probably wants to be a cop when he gets out.
Yeah.
So oftentimes what I saw in gang activity, the parents that were gang members, sometimes their kids trying to, you know, imitate their parents.
Mm.
And sometimes the family got involved. It became a family affair.
Gotcha. You know? Yeah.
And our job to, via education, outreach with the folks, cooking and meeting the folks.
Yeah.
We're trying to break that cycle, you know. So.
Yeah.
Sometimes we were successful. Sometimes we weren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So after 21 years, you came crawling back to Canby. What was that decision like for you?
It was hard.
Yeah, to leave Portland.
Well, it was hard to leave Portland. I worked there for 21 years.
Yeah.
New friends.
Yeah.
I was in a pretty good...
You were kind of looking for that lieutenant piece, though. Is that it?
I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
Promoting from in Portland.
Yeah.
You know? And so when this position came open, a new position from Canby, I thought, well, you know, I wouldn't mind going back home.
Yeah.
You know, to finish my law enforcement career,
it's cool.
Where I started.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I was very nervous. I haven't been in a job interview for years, you know, a new job. You know, so I had to really work hard, do some research and getting prepared for the job.
Yeah.
And I thought I did well because I got the job.
Right, you know? Right. So, you must have done something, right?
but I'm very glad that I did. I still... You know, I still have contact with folks from Portland PD.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I did the move. And
yeah.
I think I'm doing well here.
Mm-hmm.
I met everybody here, and everybody's great.
Yeah.
Super excited. I got a great appreciation for the United States.
Mm.
It has been a great ride for me.
Yeah, you never ended up going back. That was your original plan,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I appreciate all the opportunities that I have taken advantage. When I said advantage, just work hard for it.
Sure.
But they were there.
Yeah.
And it was just for me to go and grab it.
Yeah.
At one point, I wanted to serve the United States military.
Yeah.
And I almost did, but things turn out, and I never was able. I got older, and then
it's not too late.
Well, the age limit, start getting interfering with that goal.
Yeah,
and so when the law enforcement perspective came, I felt that it was important for me, maybe some way to serve this country that has offered me so much.
Sure,
and my family. Now I'm very proud of my kid, Tyler. That is serving the military, you know, it's in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
For my wife's side, all her two brothers served in the military, and her dad was a World War II hero.
Oh, wow.
I got one of his Purple Hearts right here.
Wow. What was his name?
His name was Cy Meigs. And I have this, one of the bullets that hit him right there. Guy, I love him. He was like a second dad to me. You know?
That's crazy. That's an actual bullet from him?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So he got 3 Purple Hearts. He got shot 3 different times. So that service that you talked about, it means a lot to me. So from my wife's side of the family, from my side, you know.
Sure.
And now, and that to me was almost like a payment back to this country.
Yeah.
And I felt the law enforcement was one route for me to do so.
So let's talk about Canby. What's kind of your approach, and is it similar or is it very different to how you would do things in Portland? Like when you're looking at being, you know, and maybe the job is different as far as being police lieutenant here, and you know, not in the division that you were in. But describe your approach to law enforcement here in town. And
I find law enforcement is local.
Hmm.
Portland has their own problems, their own way to deal with different things.
Mm-hmm.
Politics are involved, you know.
Yeah.
And in small towns or Canby itself, got our own unity here.
Yeah.
So my approach is to feel local, to ask the folks what's needed, and to see what kind of issues do we have.
Yeah.
And then from that approach, reach out to folks and outreach to whoever, you know.
Yeah.
Politicians, residents, citizens, and listen to them out. You
know? Yeah.
And once you have that approach and you see what the needs are for the city, then trying to direct law enforcement personnel to assist the citizens to make that goal.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like people here are pretty receptive to that? I feel like the Canby Police Department has a pretty strong reputation in town, and there are already some of those existing kind of trust and relationships that you can tap into as far as a newer person coming here and kind of trying to get the feel for what the needs are.
I have found, not to put down Portland.
It's okay. We can put down Portland. That's fine with me.
But the approach to the police here is overwhelming.
Mm.
I feel so welcome here. Mm-hmm. The folks, when I'm out on the street, getting a cup of coffee or just patrolling and helping patrol officers here and calls. Citizens always approaching and welcoming me or welcoming the police officer, thanking us for our service. So it's totally different than you would find in the Portland.
Yeah.
Portland's a lot bigger.
Sure.
So it's not necessarily that Portland folks don't thank the police. They do.
Yeah.
They appreciate the police there too. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But when you're in a small city, you get to meet with the citizens more often, I think.
Yeah.
And I found that so pleased when citizens approach me and thank me for my service here in town.
Yeah.
It's really overwhelming.
Cool. And all of that without even doing a barbecue here yet, right?
So, yeah, I haven't done it yet.
Yeah, I know. I mentioned my kids, and when they see a police officer, you guys are like celebrities to them. You know, they'll like tug on my leg and be like, look, you know, it's an officer. And it's just cool. And I feel like that's probably pretty common with the kids and things. Just I know you guys here as well go to schools and stuff like that. So I always, that kind of warms my heart a little bit.
I think the Canby officers, they're so professional.
Yeah.
And this, they like to be connected with the citizens here.
Yeah.
And I think I haven't done anything. The work is done already. The professionals from here have done that job, that connection with the citizens here, you know. So for me, it's just tug along and do what they do and do the same thing. And if we had an opportunity to make it something, you know, a barbecue or something to get together.
Sure,
why not?
Sure.
You know, it's just another thing that we can do to make us even closer.
I think Chief Smith said you guys were going to host a barbecue at my house. So I don't know if he told you about that, but you can just take that from me. You don't need to clear that with him or anything. Cool. Well, it's awesome hearing your story. Thank you so much for talking
to me.
This was really fun. And I look forward to that barbecue. Thanks so much for doing that.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you a lot. Right.
Thank you.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart
of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability, with a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people.
And also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
True story. When we first started the Can Be Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Oregon has long been known for its craft beer industry, but in recent years, cider has taken off too. Our own Hannah Ray Lambert sat down recently with Ronan Feely, who moved here from Ireland a decade ago and eventually started Aurora Cider Company. He tells us about the first time he made cider, spoiler alert, it turned out terrible, as well as starting his business and the time a possibly drunk stranger called to weigh in on his product. Cheers!
We grew up in a town in Ireland where there was like 200 people, and when you get up into the later teens, you kind of want to see what all this, you know, drinking is about. And we couldn't get served in the pub because everybody knows everybody. I found a recipe for cider in my mother's cookbook. My mother didn't drink much, but we went and there's lots of apple trees, you know, scattered around the country, just like there is here in the Willamette Valley. So we went and we raided a few apple trees and grated the apples by hand. Probably lost most of our knuckles.
Oh my God.
Put this mess of cider underneath my bed in a 5-gallon bucket. And a couple of weeks later, you know, we pulled it out and it was like this putrid, stinking mess that looked like it would kill you and tasted worse.
But, so you tasted it after all.
Yeah, that. Well, we kind of thought, you know, in 2 weeks we would pull the bucket out and it would be this glistening, you know, like a pristine pint with beads of condensation running down the glass, and we were sorely disappointed. But the bug stuck, you know, and when we moved over here to the Willamette Valley, when we moved to Aurora, especially, there was an apple tree in our garden. And it was around the time that the boom was of cider was taking off. And so my brother-in-law and I made some cider. And it was okay. It didn't taste great. But it reminded me of, you know, the kind of homesteading thing. And the ingredients were cheap. A couple of years later, you know, I was kind of knocking it back and forth, but you know, we've got two young kids and you don't want to throw a bunch of money after, you know, a dream. But the company I work for got bought out by another company and we had some stock, and so we got a little cash bonus. And I was like, you know, if I do it now, it's not gonna sink us. And so I'll give it a go. And yeah, that was it. That's 2 years ago.
Okay. So kind of recent starting it, but pretty much a lifelong interest.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice in that anybody can do it. So, which means it's good for people like me who aren't very scientific. Making beer is really hard because there's a lot of measurements and a lot of calculations, and you've got to be really careful with cleanliness and hygiene. And with cider, you get a bunch of apples. You squeeze them, you put them in a bucket, you throw some yeast in, and then you leave it for 6 months. And honestly, anybody could do it. So after I got all my licensing sorted out with the OLCC, then I started renting some space off St. Joseph's Winery in Canby. I rent some space and some equipment off them, and they produce kegs of cider, and that's what I sell right now.
How much about are you producing on any given month? Or
I am a really small operation. The idea of it was to do this kind of holistically. It's like, you know, when a band start off and you really like the band, and then they get bigger and they become more commercial, and then you go like, yeah, I've heard their earlier stuff. So I'm trying to do this incrementally so that I don't lose sight of what it is that I'm trying to do, which is to make really good cider, and not sell a lot of it. But what I do make, I want to be something that I would drink myself. A lot of the cider that's out there is very sugary and fruity, and I kind of go like it. I like the dry English Irish style cider. That's nothing except apple juice and yeast. and I don't want to deviate from that, because I'm not in it to make money. I'm just in it to make people happy.
You'd be doing it even if you weren't selling it.
I'd probably be doing more of it if I wasn't selling
really?
It. Yeah. If you weren't doing it commercially, you know, you could take more chances with using different yeast types, different varieties of apple.
What kind of apples do you typically use?
So, crab apples I love.
Really?
Yeah, and they call them spitters. If you have an apple that's a spitter, then that's a good cider apple.
Really?
It's a spitter because you eat it and you spit it out because it's too bitter.
Okay.
The apples that I typically use are Manchurian crab apple, which are a little thing about the size of an olive.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, but they're really high in sugar and tannin. So the alcohol is very high, and it gives a nice kind of musty taste to the cider. I discovered an old cider orchard in Wilsonville.
Okay.
That I was able to use their apples, and so it's this kind of weird blend that will be available soon, and it's kind of everything in together, but it turned out really good. This year is going to be pretty exciting.
Nice. So where are your ciders available?
Philbert's Farmhouse here in Aurora is my kind of main account, which is really nice because it's made here, not sold here. And they have a farmhouse kind of theme to their menu. And so that really fits in with what I'm doing.
Definitely.
The other places are Cutfort's occasionally. The Stillhouse in Oregon City occasionally. And then there's various places here. The Midpoint Restaurant in Portland are a regular customer. A couple of places in Salem, Newburgh, and I really only like to put my cider into places that I would like to go myself. Because like I said, it's not about making money, it's just about kind of having this little side business that, you know, gives me a hobby. You know, I break even every year.
Hey, that's not a bad place to be.
Yeah,
if you're doing it for the joy.
Yeah.
You mentioned Cutsports. Since you sell in kegs, is that like sort of a bring your own growler and fill?
Yeah, they have crowlers, which is a can growler.
Oh, okay.
And then they have their bar.
I didn't know they started doing those. That's cool.
Yeah, they have a bar in there, and they serve it in there. So they were my first customer, actually. You know, as soon as I got my license, I was like, hey, I'm going to be making some cider here in about 6 months. And they were like, sure, you know, bring it in. Yeah, they were great from the get-go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, what's in the future for you? I know you have said how you want to keep that kind of small, holistic approach to it, but is there anything change coming?
Yeah, I went out of the gate with a kegs-only approach, which is essentially just because I wanted to see if I liked the business. It's a strange business because you know, you got to go and see people and do tastings, and then they go, yeah, give me a shout in 2 weeks, and then you call them and they go, we just put a keg on yesterday, call me again in 2 weeks, and then I lose contact with them because I'm not a businessman. And so Everybody who I went to said, you know, but if you have bottles, then we've got a lot of shelf space. So this year I'm doing organic 750 ml bottles that are bottle conditioned. Bottle conditioned just means that the carbon dioxide, the carbonation, is made inside the bottle, and you get a kind of a yeast sediment at the bottom. You know, you get that kind of funky little last couple of mouthfuls. You know, there wasn't much of an appetite for cloudy bottle conditioned ciders.
Okay.
You know, the American palate likes a clear, sparkling liquid, but because I'm not going after a mass market, I'm more going after the people who are connoisseurs, dare I say, people who drink stuff because they want to try a particular blend of apples, or they want to try a particular yeast, and they want to try more high-end stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of sits where I want to be too. And you know, if it doesn't sell, then I guess I'm just going to have to drink it all myself.
Oh, darn.
I mean, it's the worst part of the job, you know. Somebody rang me the other day, actually, from Filbert's Farmhouse. I was in work and I got a call from an unknown number, you know. This guy said, is this Aurora Cider Company? And I was like, yes. And he said, oh, I'm in Filbert's Farmhouse kitchen and I'm drinking your cider. And I was like, okay. And he goes, this is the best cider I've ever drank in my life. And I was like, that's nice to hear. So this guy went to the bother of like Googling me and then finding my phone number and then calling me to tell me that this was the best cider that he'd ever drank.
It must have really been the best cider then.
I know, but it is 8% alcohol, so I think he had a couple in him by the time he called me, you know. So, but you know, when you hear stuff like that, it kind of makes you feel like you're doing something right.
I'm the middle son between two athletic wins. Let's start with that. That is to say, I'm not fit. That is to say, I'm overweight, and my two brothers are very not. My whole life I've been trying to play catch up with my older brother, much like a snail tries to play catch up with a cheetah. My older brother was the kind of guy that played football, hockey, ultimate frisbee, MMA, whatever it was. And I was there too, eating a sandwich, drinking a Yoo-hoo, snorting Flonase so that my allergies didn't bother me too much. What am I allergic to, you ask? Well, grass, hay, pollen, fruits, vegetables, avocados, some perfumes, the sun, water, sweat, human interaction. You might think that this is a joke, but everything before the sun is completely true, and the latter half is true-ish. But I think you get the point. If Randy was doing a sport, you can bet your bottom dollar that I was there suffering in support. Then you get my little brother, who didn't have the athletic spirit that Randy did, but Cam, he did enjoy one sport very much, ping pong. He liked it so much that my dad sought out a ping pong master and signed him up for the classes, and then some leagues. I like to imagine a scene out of a 1970s kung fu movie, Master Pong. I don't know what his real name was, so we're just going to go with this generic yet awesome-sounding title. Master Pong had trained Cam and my dad in the ancient arts of the ping pong. And it was a dark night. The church that held the tournament was also dark, save one light shining down on the table that Cam played at. And he went toe-to-toe with another young boy who had everything to prove. Two sons ping-ponging for the love of their fathers on a brand new Stello 7 SVR. I don't know what the name of this stuff is. And a pack of premium 3-star balls. So, you know, all good prizes. Cam didn't end up winning, but that didn't stop him from continuing the sport. To this day, the best and most heated bouts in the garage were always between Cam and my dad. It's safe to say that my two brothers are more athletically inclined than me. Just to be fair, I did play sports. I played soccer, and I thought I did pretty well. I mean, I caught the ball more than anyone else on my team. For some reason, my dad never signed me up again. And then I played baseball, and I was in the outfield, and I caught lots of pop flies, which is what I called butterflies when I caught those. Football started after I came back to Oregon my 6th grade year. Didn't like hitting people. Then paintball. Didn't like getting hit. Then in high school, I played racquetball, broke my elbow, and sat on the bench for my senior year, eating sandwiches, drinking Yoo-hoos, snorting Flonase. The last time I stepped into a racquetball court was on Christmas Eve several years back. Hit myself in the face with my own racket and shattered my front tooth. The dentists, and I mean all the dentists, were closed for Christmas Eve, Christmas, and the Saturday and Sunday that followed. 4 days of agony. Okay, enough about my tragic life as a failed sportsman. Or as my dad would so eloquently put it, you know what? We'll get there. So one day, I'm hanging out with my dad. He tells me that Cam went with Randy to the new MMA gym that Randy coaches at. Oh yeah, Randy's so good at punching people now that he teaches other people how to do it. And he took Cameron to his gym, so he could start teaching him how to do it. My dad asked if I wanted to join him while he goes to pick up Cam, and I thought it would be cool to see this gym where people pay money to let my older brother bash in their faces. And, you know, to see Cameron too. And let me tell you something. Being a fat guy in a hot, sweaty room of perfect-looking people doesn't feel so great. So, while I sat there all alone, in the chairs that faced the entire gym and fighting ring, I focused on just kind of eating my lunch. Basically the reverse of a stage. I sat in the chairs and felt like everyone was staring at me as I munched away. My dad started chatting with people, as he does, and he talked to people about his days of boxing. I see Randy and Cam sparring a bit. It's a good bit of entertainment for a middle child such as myself to see my brothers beating each other up. And that's when I hear the conversation to my left, between my dad and the gym owner. The owner told my dad how lucky they were to have Randy coaching, and Cam seems to really have a fighter spirit. It was a great compliment, and it was super cool to hear that. Now, I wasn't eavesdropping too hard. They were standing only a few feet away from me, but it was enough to far away enough that I could distance myself from them. Any newcomer into the gym would never have guessed that I was with the former boxer and gym's owner. And that's when he said it. My father, he is a good man and a great dad. And there are things that he has said that I have heard my entire life. Things that I can recite from memory. Things that he doesn't even have to finish saying anymore. I know exactly what he would have finished saying. In this case, what my dad wanted to say was, yeah, Randy and Cam got the leaner, more athletic builds of our family. Better for Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. Unfortunately, Tyler got the stockier, more bulky muscle build of our family genes, which would be great for wrestling. That's what he wanted to say. Unfortunately, he realized partway through his grand observation of his begotten that he had not introduced me. I was just some rando sitting on the chairs, waiting and watching sweating people touch each other. So he decided to stop saying what he was saying and say something else. My dad, my father, the man who gave me life, said, yeah, Randy and Cam got the leaner, more athletic builds of our family. Better for Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu. Unfortunately, this is my middle son, Tyler. Did you catch the difference? And that's how I went from being just the fat guy sitting, eating my sandwich and drinking my Yoo-Hoo, to becoming my father's unfortunate middle son.
Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest, and the FOB Taproom in Cambie is one of the best places to enjoy all your old favorites and your new favorites. They have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beer, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world. Hey, Tyler, do you know what FOB stands for? That's right. It's Friends of Beer, and that's what they are.
Oh, well, the FOB Taproom also hosts an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on, so come on by. Find them at the Cambie Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Lieutenant Jose Gonzalez and Ronan Feely. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do, we encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In our next episode, we raise a glass to Oregon's history, specifically its history of growing and brewing beer. The history of beer in Oregon goes back over 200 years.
from the Lewis and Clark expedition to early pioneer hop growers, from the 19th century European immigrants who established Oregon's first breweries to the craft brewery revolution centered here today. The Oregon Historical Society tells that story in their current exhibit, Barley, Barrels, Bottles, and Brews, and we'll bring it to you here next time on the Can Be Now podcast.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Can Be Now, or on our website, canbenowpod.com.